Hello, I'm with Eric. Welcome to Conscious Living. My guest today, I'm going to do a two guests. The book Alien Abduction Files, that's the name. I don't like to talk too loud over the music. I end up, you know, screaming in my ears. So I abstain from that. The most startling cases of human-alien contact ever reported, Alien Abduction Files, written by Kathleen Marden and Denise Stoner. And if you are familiar with Kathleen Marden, she's the niece of Betty and Barney Hill, and that's like the most famous abduction case ever. It's what started all of this, people becoming aware that there might be something like that going on and talking about it. The other factor, I wrote a little bit, a bio on Kathleen when she came to Kansas City for a convention in 2009 or so. But it was one of those, you know, you meet and you miss and go on. And so it's really nice to kind of, you know, get reconnect and see what she's doing now and how she's adding to the, basically the research that's going on behind the scenes of what's happening with these encounters and how it might relate to everybody else in their own lives. And maybe they can connect their own dots or at least come forward and talk about it without feeling like they're all alone. And if you've had this experience, then listen, because there are some details and some clues in here that might dovetail into your own. Denise Stoner is an experiencer, and so she has her own background to add to the table. And Kathleen has done her due diligence in doing everything she could to make sure that this is legit, that it's ongoing, that it's in some way, shape, or form credible, because it has external content and connections that other people can validate her stories too. So thank you guys, both of you, for being here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having us.
And I guess we'll go ahead and kick it off. Kathleen, how did you guys connect, and what was the initial, I guess, thing that brought you together?
Well, I moved from New Hampshire to Florida about 3.5 years ago. And Denise and I had connected before that via email, so I knew a little bit about who she was. But when I arrived down here, I decided that I wanted to meet her in person and attend her meetings. At that time, she was Florida MUFON's director chief investigator and a state section director. She's now the assistant director of abduction research in our studies in Florida. So I attended some of her meetings, and I was impressed with Denise. I thought she was very professional. She carried herself well. I realized later that she was very good at maintaining confidentiality. I was impressed with her intelligence, her stability, just her entire outlook. And the two of us started to work together on a few cases, and then as we got to know each other, she opened up to me and told me confidentially at that time that she had had abduction experiences herself, and she had had one in 1982. This was a major missing time event, and another in 1991. So I was curious about these and wanted to investigate them. I wanted to know if she had ever had hypnosis regarding these events. And she told me that she had for the first event that occurred in Colorado in 1982 with Dr. Romack. Dr. Romack had done some hypnosis, but she couldn't recall what she had said. She remembered something about a black hole, but that was about it. And Dr. Romack was then deceased, and all of his records and files were gone, so Denise didn't have access to them. Well, I was a certified hypnotherapist in the state of New Hampshire and had experience in working with abduction experiencers, so I offered to facilitate Denise's memory because she wanted to be able to recall all of the details of what had occurred during these two major missing time events where there were witnesses, so the story could be checked out.
Okay, with your background in terms of what you bring to the picture, Kathleen, have you had your own encounters? I know you've done volumes of work with your aunt and uncle, but have you had your own experiences?
I have had some close encounters. And I'm not ready to say that I am an abduction experiencer. I've had events in my life that seem pretty consistent with that, but I really don't know. I don't have the level of evidence that Denise has. And without that level of evidence, I could never state unequivocally that I am an experiencer.
Okay, I just wanted to, you know, kind of get a grip on that, because sometimes when, as an experiencer, you have the ability to ask these questions or have this sense, and you have that, given that you have done all of the research you have with your aunt and uncle. That's a kind of a leg up on everybody else. You know what to look for. But the other thing is people who've had the experiences also have a commonality that they can immediately pick up on some of the details, the behind the scenes that not everybody talks about. And you talk about keeping some of that information private.
That is correct. We do that in order to determine whether or not an experience is real. Because we know if somebody has had hypnosis and they've read everything there is to read in this field, they could very easily confabulate a false memory of abduction. So those of us in the field who work with experiencers on a regular basis do reserve some information for ourselves and among ourselves.
One of the books that I like the most that got into this is, before we get into Denise's story, Passport to the Cosmos with John E. Mack. It opened a huge area for people and gave a bit of legitimacy to this topic, to start out with, saying that, look, guys, we really, really have to do more to investigate this and stop discounting and making fun of the people who are sharing their stories, because they're not, for the most part, the people that he contacted and spoke with had no desire to be publicly ridiculed or taken out and said, you know, made fun of, because they had experienced something that profoundly changed them. And Denise, that's what I wanted to get into with your story, is what happened and how did you change? So I guess we have to take it a bit at a time.
right. Yeah, that's a lot all at once.
So the first missing time event, what was that?
It's been throughout my lifetime, but the ones that we really wanted to talk about, first when we lived in Colorado and we were getting ready to go up to our campsite in Buena Vista outside of Denver, and we were getting ready so that we would leave while the sun was still shining, and it was 5:00 in the evening in the summertime, so we had plenty of time to do this in daylight. And we were going to leave from just outside of Denver, a town called Arvada, where we lived. We were both home packing the car, ready to leave on time. And we were going to hit an area called Kenosha Pass. It was a mountain pass that then dipped down into an open valley that was completely flat. It was high desert. So we packed. Our daughter was in the car, a little dog, and everything was ready to go. We were going to meet my parents, who were coming from Colorado Springs, and their trip was a little bit shorter. So they would get there first and have dinner for us. We had done this many times over a period of years. So we left, got to Kenosha Pass. There's a place where you can pull over. It holds several cars, and just get out, stretch our legs, and then get back in the car and head on, finish the journey. So we did that, and when we started down to the base of the valley floor, I noticed two lights off in the distance, and at the same time, I was looking at a little town called Jefferson, which is right at the bottom, at the beginning of the valley floor. We always pass through that, and I'm watching the lights, and I'm talking to my husband, and I thought, gosh, those are weird. Deserts are strange anyway. And there's absolutely nothing there, no tall trees, nothing in this high desert area. So I'm trying to figure out what's making these lights. And we go down Pastor Jefferson, chatting away, and all of a sudden the lights are coming towards us fairly fast. About 4 miles outside of Jefferson, the lights have caught up with us and they're over the car. And I turned to ask my husband, what could those be? What's going on? And he's frozen to the wheel. His eyes are looking straight ahead. He's not responding. So I start to look around like, uh-oh, you know, something's really wrong. I'm getting nervous, a little frightened. And there are huge snow barriers made out of wood on either side of the road. Because at night, in the summer, there are huge tumbleweeds that can be 5 feet tall that would blow across the road and cause an accident. You wouldn't see them coming. In the wintertime, snow blows across the road. It could cause an accident. So they put these snow barriers up. Well, all of a sudden, I noticed the tires on the driver's side starting to scrape on the road. And the whole car was moving sideways. So it was very, very frightening. And my husband had no control. Our daughter was sound asleep. And then suddenly the car lifted up, went right over the top of the snow barriers, and headed out into the high desert. As soon as I realized that we were going to settle down on the desert floor, everything kind of went dark. I didn't know what was happening. The lights were still above us, seemed to be moving over towards the front of the vehicle. And also, my husband had set the odometer because it was a fairly new car, and he was worried about our gas mileage. He was that, not picky, but he wanted everything to be all right. So the next thing we knew, we were all the way across that valley. We were on the next pass, which was called Trout Creek. And we should have had sunlight because we wanted to arrive while it was still light out, only it was pitch dark. It was okay. Hours later. The headlights were on. We did not turn the headlights on. We were both frightened and disoriented and just edgy and cold because the desert at night, whether it's summer or not, it can get pretty cold. Temperature drops up to 20 degrees sometimes. So my husband said, let's pull over. Let's just pull over and see if we can figure out what's going on. We did. And we looked behind us. There's no traffic, absolutely no traffic. And figured out we'd gone all the way across that desert and didn't remember a thing, except I knew that car left the road.
That's my question on the car. When you say you're going over the snow barriers, is this off over the side of the mountain or off into a different road? Could you, because that is, as you're listening, when you're reading it, it's a different context. But when you're listening, it's like you're on a mountain pass.
Yes, the mountain pass of Kenosha dips down into this valley. There's only one road and it's flat, high desert, totally okay. Flat. And the snow barriers are right against the side of the road. So when the tires started to scrape, the car lifted right up and went over the snow barriers off into the desert.
Oh, see, that had to be, you're looking out the windows going, hello, help, help, huh?
Yes, yeah, your mind is...
Wait. Yeah, you can't think, can you? It's too fast.
It was too fast. It was very fast, very rapid. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, my husband's not talking, he's not responding. The car's up in the air. If somebody put it down, please.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And
now.
The lights are above the car. I can't see what they're attached to. I didn't ask for any of this. Where are we going? You know, your mind is just going rapid fire. So we said, or my husband said, you know, your parents are waiting for us. It's pitch dark. Let's just go on. We had another 7 to 9 miles to go. Our daughter was okay. She was sound asleep. So we headed on, and when we pulled into the ranch property, there stood my parents and a family friend. And my dad and friend had worked in aerospace together, both in California at Aerojet, and now they both worked at Command Sciences. So they were very scientific-minded, but still they were going to call the police and the fire department and the hospitals and ask, you know, if we had been admitted to a hospital or had been in a wreck. And they said, when we rolled down the window, where have you been? And we looked at them and said, we don't know. We have no idea. And my dad he asked a couple of times, and then just kind of let it go, like, well, that's their business. We're just going to have to deal with what they said. And my mom is a mom. And no, she knew, okay, my daughter was up to something. So it wasn't my son-in-law. They were absolutely up to no good. Now I'm going to figure this out, and they're going to answer me. So she kept it up throughout the weekend. What's going
what
on,
all good moms
kids?
Would do.
You know. And,
I know you want to talk,
had
I just couldn't do it at the moment.
And we just couldn't give her an answer. So at one point, I started to have these memories or flashbacks of these oddly shaped heads with big eyes, of a kind of a funny craft of all bits and pieces of things that wouldn't go together. And my husband, he didn't really have anything at all that he could talk about, so we didn't. And that's the story of that missing time. It was just all very odd. The odometer, as soon as we left Trout Creek Pass, began to work again.
Okay, so it could have been something in the dynamic of the geometrics or the whatever of that area that kept it, or the proximity of something else that kept it from functioning, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Could have been. Yeah.
Okay, so these are all questions and unknowns, and they remained unknown for how long?
Well, at some point, it wasn't too long afterwards, that I had been working with Dr. Bob Romack. I had volunteered, actually, to work with him as a guinea pig, because I was a good hypnotic subject, on pain control and how to do that for people that had chronic pain and didn't want to take drugs. So we were working together, and I knew him well enough that I just told him what happened. And we discovered that we had a mutual interest in UFO research and that type of thing. So he offered to do the hypnosis work. And we began to work on it and discovered that I had been taken aboard a craft. We had had this experience, this abduction experience. I had seen entities. We worked on it. He taped it. He also had notebooks. And I worked with him for over 5 years. We did a lot of research. And then we moved to, my husband and family moved to Florida. I kept in touch with Bob until he dropped dead on his floor in his home of a massive heart attack. He had 6 children. Several of them died before him. And then the others passed away. I had stayed in touch with his wife. She passed away. There's no family left. And I lost all of those tapes, or hopes of ever acquiring them.
And that's where Kathleen comes in.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so Kathleen, when you wanted to get Denise back into that mode of remembering, is this dicey? Because, you know, when you're talking about the time that would have passed and the possibility that Denise had more encounters or more became more educated, that she might have shifted her memories. How do you get back in there and kind of work it fresh?
Well, I have advanced training in hypnotic regression and also in post-traumatic stress disorder. And so what we did was a regression with Denise back to that date, to that time frame. She didn't even know what date this occurred on. Through hypnosis, we were able to discover the date itself. So, you know, we were working back and working back toward this sort of thing to recover those memories. I didn't start with the experience itself. We started in that general time frame to recall other events that happened in that time frame, what she did on that particular day, where she lived, how old her daughter was, and that sort of thing, before we ever did get to detailing how she packed the car that afternoon for the trip and what occurred along the way. to the point that she found the car being lifted up and carried across the desert floor and then set down again and then being taken onto the craft by a being that she recognized as someone who had contacted her several times before in her life. This is the one that she called her escort.
Okay, now, real quickly. So, did you remember those bits before this came back?
Did I recall the entity or my escort?
The earlier was
yes.
That. Okay, so you knew those things were happening.
Yeah, I just didn't realize what they were because I was a child. I didn't know what they were until I began to work with Kathleen.
Okay, yeah, that was a way of connecting the dots.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Were you working for the military at that point when you were working with Kathleen?
No, I was working for National Park Service at that time.
Okay.
Go ahead.
When I was reading the bio about your military work, the background investigations on recruits and all that, I mean, that's pretty intense involvement and would expect for you to be highly credible in the first place. And I also find it fascinating that a lot of military people are saying they've had these UFO ET encounters. And I sense that there's a lot more to that equation than we've figured out just yet.
Yes, I had a very interesting job. I worked for National Park Service, but not your normal park job. I worked for a group of three others who did planning, design, and construction for the first national park in Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
It was called the Asir, and I handled the account for the Saudis. And at the time, it was a lot of money. It was over $3 million.
Okay.
I had a clearance in order to know some of the things about the prince and the royal family over there.
Okay, so that kind of establishes you as somebody who has behind-the-scenes connections or ties.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and when I moved to Florida, I went to work for the military.
Okay, because you'd already basically met in certain criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, the fact that when you were talking about your dad and the military background, or not the military, but the aviation background.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he went to work for Aerojet. He did some testing of things that he couldn't talk about out in an area called Jackass Flats, underground in tunnels. And so didn't our family friend.
Now, when you discussed all this and began working with Kathleen, were you able to go back and talk with your dad about any of this?
No, my dad had passed away in 1995 of Lou Gehrig's disease that were probably caused by something he was testing chemical-wise.
Okay. Because I think, these connections that you guys have uncovered are really fascinating. This whole, the threads that are interwoven in there are fascinating, to me at least.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Me too, I agree.
Well, okay, so Kathleen, you've talked to a lot of other experiencers. How does her story, I guess, exemplify, because the two of you working this together, how does it exemplify for many experiencers their own encounters?
Well, I have to tell you that Denise and I did a research project in 2012, and there were 50 experiencers who participated in the study. We had a 25-person control group. We wanted to know that commonalities among experiencers were not also common among the general population. So that was the reason for the control group. And we discovered out of 45 questions, there were 23 commonalities among experiencers, and Denise had every one of those things in common. She had a close encounter and she was fully conscious at the time. In fact, it was daylight when this occurred. She had retained conscious recall of observing a non-human at one point in her life. So that was something else. There were witnesses who observed Kraft near her house at one point. She had what she believed is an implant in her body. And in fact, I had the opportunity to actually observe and feel what appeared to be a BB-size, perhaps, ball in her arm that traveled down to her hand and then disappeared. And I watched this over a period of about 5 days. And Denise had even considered going to a physician, perhaps to have it x-rayed, but it simply disappeared before she had the opportunity to do that. Denise developed new psychic abilities after she had these experiences, and for a period of time had the ability to heal animals. So that was another thing that she had in common. She had a craving for salt. At one time, she was experiencing migraine headaches and chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome. And this is much higher among experiencers than in the general population. So she had many, many things in common, more sensitive to light than the general population. It's very interesting.
Okay, and do those things just go away over time, or what's happened?
Well, for me, one of the things has not gone away. I don't have the severe migraines anymore, but if I look at a particular type of light or reflection, I immediately, within 15 seconds, get what's called an ocular migraine. And it's like a little spinning pinwheel with all different colored lights, and it gets, or an amoeba, I guess would be a way to describe it, that gets larger and larger, and I have all the symptoms of a migraine. The nausea, the sick feeling, I can't see, my vision is impaired, and it lasts half an hour to 45 minutes without the pain, and then it goes away. I had to go and have that diagnosed.
Wow. Okay. That's unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very unusual. I had to ask the doctor, what in the world is going on? I thought, do I have a brain tumor? What's going on here? And I'm glad I don't have the pain. But at first, I always think, am I coming down with the flu? What's this weird feeling? And then all of a sudden, I'll get that spinning. It's like a little window or a pinwheel that starts and gets larger and larger and larger. So I know that I've had some flash of light or a reflection of a windshield or something that always starts it up.
Okay, I want to get back into a little bit more of the research that you did with the other. You include another story, a more detailed story of another woman, I believe New Jersey, but her identity is confidential. So in the next part of the story, if you could share some of details of that. And if you're listening, pay attention. You may have had something like this happen and your information has just been cloaked, hidden, for retrieval at a time when you could actually face some of the memories. It's just, this stuff is fascinating, and sometimes that's another way of giving us information before we're ready for it, and then when we are, it's presented in a different form. Not that I'm, you know, projecting, but maybe I am.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. a place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org. And after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Insta-Do. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hi there, and welcome to Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. I'm talking with my guests about the alien abduction files. Kathleen Martin and Denise Stoner are here. The most startling cases of human alien contact ever reported. They've done volumes of research between the two of them. Years, you know, 23 for one, 26 anyway, decades. How's that? But giving us an idea that there's a whole lot more to this, and you can't just, you know, give a quick look at it, a glance, and think you know everything, because the more you dig, the deeper it goes. I love the book in terms of giving you a broad view of people and their experiences, and you do leave out some of the details so that if someone comes to you now and says, hey, I've done this, and exactly what you say in the book, I've done all of that, you leave out a few just to say, oh, but this didn't happen for you, did it? And I think that's a way of qualifying and saying we are so easily, I like the way Denise said, she's a good case for hypnotherapy because she's easily influenced. We don't even know that when it's happening. And our culture is a real good example of that consumer-driven society where we're induced to buy things we don't need every day. Okay, so back to the story. The woman you include, well, you're several, there are several, but there's one who says she would lose her professional reputation if she divulged everything, but it's so profound that she feels she has to at least share the story. And it's the D. Lynn Bishop.
Oh, guys, D. Lynn Bishop. Okay. She's one of the experiencers toward the end of our book. And D. Lynn Bishop was a small child in Houston, Texas, when she and her family had their first UFO sighting. Her father was in the military. And later on in her life, she lived in Arkansas with her mother and her family. She had brothers and sisters. And she and her mother were traveling to a large city in Arkansas to do some business. And on the way home, they had a missing time experience. They observed a craft and had a very strange series of events. Later, they were hypnotized and they recalled being taken onto a craft by the ETs that we call the Grays and given physical examinations. And then this series of events continued in their lives. and has really followed her throughout her life, being taken over and over again for reproductive experiments, just as Denise has been, as Jenny has been, as Audrey and Debbie Hewins have been, as every woman in this book has undergone that kind of experience.
Okay, now that was that one of the precursors you chose to have people who have had these specific reproductive engagements, or did that just kind of happen as you went along?
That just happened. The precursor for me was missing time. I was very interested in the phenomenon of having missing time, because that way I knew that the people were wide awake and they had to be in an external environment when they were taken at least once, so that we can dispel this myth that all abductions occur when a person is in bed sleeping. At least this gave us an awareness that these individuals were wide awake and outside their homes.
Okay, because I'd like to give that a little bit more, I guess, emphasis, that just because if you've had something like this happen and you know that you have experienced something that's an anomaly and it doesn't fit within our criteria of reality, just because you haven't had the reproduction action doesn't mean your story isn't just as valid. Can I say that?
I would say that, you know, every woman that I've ever worked with has stated that there were reproductive procedures done, but not necessarily to the extent that some were. For example, Jenny Henderson, who is the New Hampshire woman whose story is told in great detail in the book, highly credible woman, just like Denise. She's a retired high school teacher. Her husband is still involved in the family business. They're well known in the state of New Hampshire, and that is why they will not reveal their identities. They are sort of in the kind of position my aunt and uncle, Betty and Barney Hill, were in, and they were afraid of the impact that this could have upon their credibility and their income. So that's the reason why I must keep them anonymous.
But okay, go ahead.
Okay, Jenny, I was just going to say that Jenny does recall some reproductive procedures, but she never did recall holding hybrid babies on board the craft. Perhaps it happened, but a lot of her memories were consciously recalled with very little hypnosis, too. So I really am wondering what might happen if she underwent hypnosis.
Okay. And see that, well, I was earlier in the show, I asked about Denise and how this has changed her life. If you can go back before you knew when you met Kathleen that you had had contact as a kid, was this something that you thought was totally impossible?
I never had a belief one way or the other. I've always been a type of individual that's very open-minded, and that's the way I was raised. My parents brought me up in one particular little New England church, but that's because everybody in the town went to that church. It's just the way it was, a little Norman Rockwell-type town. And so that's what we automatically did. But when we moved to California, when my dad transferred to Aerojet, my mom said, okay, you're old enough to make up your own mind. You can experiment, explore, do what you wish. So I've always had that freedom. And so when all of this occurred and I realized it was all connected, I went through only about 3 days of trying to figure out where was my faith based now? What was this all about? And it turned me into, I would say, an empath, because I'm very sensitive to what people's feelings and emotions are all about and how they're involved and what the universe is about. And it's just made me more sensitive to everything involved in living.
And your experience, what would you say the point of your contact has been or is?
Mine? You mean with the aliens?
Yes, your personal, yeah, you as a person, as an individual, what is your sense of this and the point?
Oh, okay. I think, first of all, that they're not trying to do harm. I think that they bred out their emotions. I think they're trying to help us and also help themselves. I think that they are trying to, over such a long period of time, been trying to save this planet that's an oasis. And I don't think there are many like it, but they're trying to make it so that we are not such a warlike people, that we can be helped. And in doing so, we can help them, again, to grow and bloom into a feeling, emotional, maybe not so much as we are, type of individual, and also to make our growth as far as cells and illness and so forth become better for both. That's just an idea of mine, a feeling I have.
Okay, and I'll go ahead and with Kathleen. What I've seen is a theme throughout this book. You've mentioned, and sometimes it's a very subtle mention, that they are adjusting a frequency or a DNA or a shift there that helps somebody with their vibration in terms of giving them the ability to ascend. And that was a word that I wasn't prepared to see in terms of, you know, with the spirituality aspect of it, helping with the ascension process. And so how does that factor in terms of your book?
Well, I think that this was toward the very end of the book where the ascension process was mentioned, and I was considering alternative explanations then, so not necessarily my own opinion or what was told to me by the experiencers I wrote about, but there is an individual that I did write about who did speak about what this might be other than alien abduction. And so it was a discussion of possibly different planes of existence and that sort of thing, that and not ET involvement. But I think you might also be referring to information that was given to me by Jenny Henderson, and this had to do with an experience she had where she felt sort of electrical charges passing through her body, pulses. And the ETs told her that the reason for this was to alter her vibrational frequency. And so, I mean, she had absolutely no knowledge of any New Age events or philosophy or anything like that, and had no idea what she was talking about. And so I started doing research on this and wondering what it might all be about. Does it have something to do with making her a healthier person? We know that people suffer ill health sometimes from the process of being in an alien environment or being moved through a solid surface. And so this is speculation on my part. I don't know for certain if one of these two or both of these lead to ill health in experiencers. But I did talk to three theoretical physicists, and this has to do with vibrational frequency. And I wanted to know if it really was possible for a human body to pass through a solid surface, such as a wall. And what I was told is that everything has a vibrational frequency. Nothing is entirely solid. So a wall might resonate at a lower vibrational frequency than the human. But I was told by one of these physicists that if we can match up frequency and phase of the human and the solid object, that matter can pass through matter, and that we have to remember that 99.9% of the atom is empty space between the protons and the electrons. So if it all works out just right and they have the technology to be able to do this, then we might be able to do it at some point in the future, and they can do it now, possibly. And
yeah, the beam me up, Scotty thing for them works.
Yes, this physicist told me that we have already accomplished this on a very small scale in a laboratory, so we know it is possible.
Okay, well, from there, and yes, that was the story I referred to, because you go back with her later on and you say that at some point they did another electrical, some kind of a huge pain in her chest, and she said it was super painful. At the same time, though, after that little encounter, then all of her health issues went away.
That is correct. Her health issues have been resolved. She was ill with chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome for about 20 years, perhaps more. And they did this procedure on her, and she remains perfectly well. It's been well over a year that she has been either in remission or healed. So this is something very positive that has occurred in her life.
And I do like the fact that you address the other things that go along with these encounters, the paranormal stuff that people still, I think, confuse and think it's one thing when it might be something else, because we're such neophytes in this area. We jump to conclusions. We go read a book and go, that's what the book said. And it's like, no, you're here. You're the experiencer. You got to figure out what it is and then go see if it meets it, which is exactly what you're doing. See if it meets what is known, because we're discovering a whole lot of unknowns, in my opinion. And we are still trying to piece these elements together to see how they work out. People who've had paranormal events go on in their lives have been able to say, oh my gosh, this is happening in conjunction with something else. And before they were able to connect the dots, they wouldn't have been able to make that conclusion. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there is a distinct possibility that two different kinds of things are going on here, some with experiencers and some with people who experience ghosts or shadow people in their homes. Their descriptions are distinctly different, whereas 88% of the abduction experiences reported that they'd witnessed paranormal activity in their homes. Those included light orbs that darted or floated through the air. Sometimes the orbs pop like a bubble into 1 to 3 ET beings before the abduction begins. I've recently received a photograph from an experiencer who has sent this to me, and it's just remarkable because it appears to have an ET's face inside of it. Many have reported poltergeist-like activity, such as household items flying through the air or pictures flying off walls or lights turning off and on. Within 2 to 3 days or maybe a little more after an experience. And this is different than what I got from the control group, where they were reporting ghosts or shadow people or spirits, mist clouds, strange sounds or odors or cold spots in their homes. So different phenomena here. And Denise and I recently made a discovery, and she had an experience in February. It was February 2nd of this year, and we had the opportunity to investigate this immediately after it occurred. She had conscious recall of being taken. This is, again, when she is driving, so she was wide awake, and when she arrived home, she discovered that she was late. Many things had started to occur. The battery on her cell phone that had been fully charged went dead. The battery on her insulin pump that was good for 3 months went dead. She was having difficulty with the instrument panel on her car. I had just dropped her off before all of this happened. We'd been at a meeting together. And, so she has this missing time. She finds herself off the road she's traveling on in sort of a desolate wooded area on a lake. She remembered an orange orb in the sky rising up out of the lake, and then she remembered an ET stepping out from behind a tree, and her car was stopped, and she was just seated there. And then something else happened, and she arrived home. She couldn't remember how she had arrived home after that. She took out her meter and measured her car that was malfunctioning. The dashboard was malfunctioning, and found that there was a strong electromagnetic field around her vehicle. So she called me, told me about this, and then she came to my house. I wanted to see this too. And the point that I'm getting at is our new discovery, where we found that there was a very strong electrical field around Denise's body. The electrical meter arced to full capacity and sounded a buzzer when she came within 10 feet of that meter. And it did not occur with any of the controls that we used. We used a number of different people. This did not happen for any of them, only for Denise. And so this was quite extraordinary. You know, we thought, well, could it be her insulin pump? Could it be her watch? She removed these things. It still occurred. This has occurred with one other experience or two. Seems to last for about two and a half weeks. And we're wondering if this is what is causing this poltergeist-type activity where things start to fly. Could it be a strong electrical field?
Yeah. In terms of having those kinds of experiences with electrical anomalies and that stuff, I have this ongoing event that I wrote a little book about, and I talk about just because it's my reality, and I don't know anybody else who's had it or who has a similar one. But it when those things happen, you have something that validates for other people that something is going on. It doesn't mean you know, or anybody knows, really. It means that here is a piece of the equation. Now, do some more homework. Do some more math. Let's figure out what's happening. But for me, it's absolutely given me a way of saying, this is valid. What it means to anybody else, it really doesn't matter to me. I have to make sense of it for myself because it's happening and it isn't going away. That's what you're looking at, too, with experiencers.
Oh, you bet. A lot of people, even the scientific types, will say, well, you have to have the answer. You have to be able to tell us, why are you doing this? Because it's not going anywhere. Yes, it is. Every time we find another little piece of the puzzle, people step out and say, you know, this happened to me, plus this, plus more. So we're gaining ground. It's making a difference.
Well, and for me, I think the more we share our stories and find the commonalities, and then the more we look for the things that, as you just discovered, the unique additions that are also present that we didn't know enough about before because it was all too new. It was it's like you had that first missing time experience. Your brain is trying to some way, shape or form make sense of it. And it doesn't make sense because you can't think fast enough to connect the dots, to add it up and go, what the heck? And the only thing you can do is go, put me down.
That's true.
But there's a lot more going on than, put me down.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, a couple of people have now said, oh, you can't remember anything when you're 2.5. Well, some people do have those memories. And I couldn't make out what it was. I knew something had happened. But thank goodness I did remember, because now that I'm older, I was able to figure out what it was. There was no question.
Okay. For you listening, you can find out more. Both of these ladies have websites, and you can get more information, more support, ask more questions. The information, the document that Kathleen mentioned earlier about their research study, there are questions there. You can actually fill out a questionnaire yourself. But both the websites, Kathleen-Martin.com, that's one of them. The other one is for Denise, Denise M. Stoner, M as in Mary, Stoner.com. And a lot of information there for people who are curious or who think they may also have something that fits into this equation.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Hopefully people will come. And we have a new research project, which is ongoing. I'm going to be gone for most of the summer traveling to promote this book and speak to different groups. So Denise is collecting all of these questionnaires. So we're hoping that if anyone has had what they think is an abduction experience, that they will go to our websites and fill this out. You can also purchase books from our website as well, autographed copies of any of my several books and the alien abduction files from Denise.
Plus, now, I have a question. I thought I saw on a little bio or sheet, Kathleen, are you coming back to Kansas City, the Midwest?
No, I won't be there this year.
Okay, because there's another event for this type of experiencer in the Midwest. I think it's in September. Kathleen, what's the next event you're going to be at?
I will be at the MUFON International Symposium in Las Vegas, and that is going to be in a couple of weeks. I'll be doing a training session on how to conduct an abduction investigation there, and it's on my website. And in early September, I'll be in Portland, Maine, for the Experiencers Speak Conference.
We have to wrap up now. And Denise, you're taking notes. Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time. I appreciate everything that you're doing. Keep up the good work. And thanks for listening to Conscious Living on Empower Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett.